Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
Joe DeCamera and John Ritchie. Middays, 10 a.m. till 2 on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
Yes, what's going on, everyone? Joe DeCamera, John Ritchie. It is 94 WIP. Great to be with you on this Friday morning. As again, we broadcast from Philly spring training at Spectrum Field after a very busy day of baseball here yesterday, and really sports all throughout the Philadelphia area. Of course, Vinny Curry back with the Birds. Great interview with Angelo a couple of minutes ago. Villanova winning last night. It was a solid job by the Wildcats. Of course, day one of the tournament, day two today. Of course, the Martelli interview with Angelo this morning was the parts I've heard. I haven't heard it all. The parts I've heard, unbelievable. We'll give you a replay of that coming up in the 11 o'clock hour. Flyers get an important win. They're now 5 points out with eight to go. Clock is obviously ticking to give themselves a shot with the win last night. And the Phils, it all gets real with the opening day happening in 6 days. So great to be with you. Much up ahead, including many interviews today down here from Clearwater. We look forward to it all with you at 888-729-9494. Joe DeCamera, John Ritchie. Big show today. Phils GM Matt Klintak on the show today. 888-729-9494. Richie Rich.
Joe.
John.
According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Americans eat more than 22 pounds of tomatoes every year.
Wow. I'm probably more than that. I like my tomatoes.
I love tomatoes too.
I like them on my sandwiches.
Every American eats more than 22 pounds of tomatoes every year?
Pizza?
Well, a lot of it is in the form of tomato sauce and ketchup,
Sure, exactly. Last night, you know, you get some French fries, whatever it may be. All right, let's get to it. 888-729-9494. John, we got a bird's eye view of an empty Spectrum Field right now. Phils, of course, not with a home game today, but we are seated in the exact same seats we were yesterday when we saw Bryce Harper smack not one, but two home runs and tremendous offensive performance yesterday and electrifying with, especially that first Harper home run, which got out, it seemed like, in 2 seconds. And very cool to witness, obviously, his first homer, non-regular season for him, but first home run with the Phils.
I tell you what. No, I'm not. I was down even closer
the second
for the
one?
Second
yeah,
home
okay.
run, which yep. was amazing.
Yep.
Yesterday was an offensive display of excellence, of things to come. You know, like this was a harbinger of just explosive home run greatness.
Yeah.
All over the place yesterday. But once again, the big question mark is, what the heck are we doing with our starting rotation? Vince Velasquez yesterday, how many pitches? 27 to get out of the first inning?
Yeah, it was a lot.
Vince Velasquez yesterday pitched 3 1/3 innings, but gave up 5 hits, walked 3 guys, gave up 3 runs. Yes, I know he had 9 strikeouts, but that high end, like that's we love watching guys whiff. You're looking for a pitcher who makes guys miss, but it comes at a cost with him. It comes at the cost. He's going to have lapses where, yeah, he just made you miss, but he's going to give you stuff to hit.
Mm-hmm.
Before our very eyes yesterday, you know, we were just saying, hey, I wonder how Vince Velasquez has progressed. The very next pitch,
right, sure,
goes yard. This is not now Vince Velasquez right now. I think would be the fifth guy in our rotation and our starting rotation. To me, that means our starting rotation is not good enough. To me, right now, this Phillies team is potentially an offensive juggernaut.
Yeah, for sure.
That has a major Achilles heel. We've got, now, we know that Nick Pivetta has looked superhuman at times in spring training.
Yep.
It is very exciting the way he has progressed. We know what Aaron Nola is. He is an ace of aces. And we know, we think we know, Jake Arrieta is...
He's all right.
He once was great.
Yeah.
Last year, he was really good at times.
Sure.
And this year, he is building on those positive times from last season.
So wait, you want to see the Phils make a move?
I think they must. If we want this team to be the team they've paid to be, we can't get there with this staff.
Yeah, see, and I tell you, I disagree with that. Here's the thing, and again, 888-729-9494, hop aboard the phone lines. It was an offensive explosion. It was very cool to witness. And obviously, it's going to be coming to a ballpark near you, not us, because we're in Clearwater right now, but coming to South Philadelphia in just 6 days. It's going to be a fun 6 months, hopefully 7 months watching Phillies baseball. I think it will be 7 months. Look, is the pitching staff right now a question mark? Absolutely. No question about it. But when John talks about, you know, needing another pitcher right now, where I disagree with that, and I mean, could it help? Sure, it could help. But I don't want another Arrieta-like signing where it's a player for too much money who's on the decline in his career. And again, too much money. That's one thing. To me, the offense is way more than good enough to carry this Phillies team while they figure out what their pitching is. Is there some risk there? Yeah, I get it. There is. There's some risk. But to me, the offense is way more than good enough to carry the day for the Phillies for a good long stretch in this season. Again, I don't want another Arrieta-like signing, you know, where it's too much money for a pitcher on the decline. Trade deadline obviously affords the Phillies the possibility of being able to acquire a pitcher during the season. And frankly, you know...
that's what I've expected all along.
Well, sure.
That they'll wait until right before the deadline and make a move if they need to.
Right.
But that was with me assuming that they wouldn't know if they need to until then.
Well, but here's the thing, John.
We know.
Yeah, but no, I don't...
We know what we have in Vince Velasquez.
Yeah, I understand that, but we don't know that Nick Pivetta and Zach Eflin might not be real good. I mean, there's certainly a possibility.
Okay. I think Zach Eflin is much improved. I know Nick Pivetta is much improved. I'm good with four. I'm good with four pitchers. And early this season, with the way the schedule shapes up, we're probably going to be on a four-man rotation, you know, to start the year.
Just the very beginning.
Yeah. But that only lasts so long.
Yeah, like 2 weeks or a week.
Yeah. We need to do something now. Look, 2 weeks doesn't get us to the trade deadline.
Right. No, I get you. Look, 888-729-9494. As we get closer and closer to the season, let's hone in now on, I mean, look, I get John's point. He wants the team to be complete. I understand that. I want the Phillies to be complete also, but I also want to be realistic about how they get there. I mean, the reality is it's a phenomenal offense, and short of massive injury, that's not going to change. I mean, they're fielding some unbelievable firepower. I mean, they got a guy in Cesar Hernandez, and he's not firepower, but he's very solid, who last year led off, who this year is probably going to hit seventh. That's unbelievable. So to me, that's a tremendous upgrade on the offensive side. Defense also, by the way, should be way better. Bullpen should be better.
Yes.
So then it's okay, the pitching.
But there's also Dallas Keuchel still out there available. There's also Aniel De Los Santos, who is developing fast. I mean, he's good. He's in AAA. You've also got Cole Irvin, who was the minor league pitcher of the year last year.
Well, good, then wait for him.
You've also got Drew Anderson. Drew Anderson, who's been the unspoken star of spring training because he went and developed a cutter, and he's sitting on a .71 ERA right now.
Well, that's why you don't make a move, because you believe in these guys coming through the system. That's my point.
I want them to make it obvious to me. I want them to show me. I want to see these other options right now, moving into that rotation, showing us as fans what they can do. And if you feel like you got to go there. Jared Eichhoff, we know that he had the injury issues.
I forgot about him, yeah.
The injury issues, and he's not the same. So right
Which
now
is
you
a
got,
shame.
Right now you got Vince Velasquez and Jared Eichhoff in that starting rotation. They are in our rotation.
Well,
they're like five and six right now.
Yeah, Eichhoff's not in.
And we need to be honest with ourselves and make a move in terms of bringing someone in or bringing someone up.
888-729-9494. Joe DeCameron, John Rich again. 888-729-9494. Less than a week to go to opening day. Do you feel the Phils, and specifically Clintak, have shortchanged the team by shortchanging the starting rotation. I do not feel that way at all. I mean, to me, the idea of being able to, I'll call it wait and see and make a move if need be, is a very wise approach, given that the offense should carry the team for a good long stretch, and that some of these guys, specifically the three and the four, in Pivetta and Eflin, you know, may turn out to be, you know, pretty damn solid. We'll see. 888-729-9494. Or like John, do you think the Phils should just kind of, I don't know, I mean, I guess you can say, just further bolster their claim for the National League East this year by hitting the ground running, by signing a pitcher right now that can obviously make it a better staff out of the gate and make them a stronger team for the 162. Hop aboard the phone lines, 888-729-9494. I've got no problem at all with how Klintak has played this. What do you think? 888-729-9494. All right, big show on tap. Larry Boa joins us during the 10 o'clock hour. You'll hear the Martelli interview. Unbelievable stuff with Angela this morning. That's in the 11 o'clock hour. Beat the Hammer today at noon. Klintak on the show at 12:30. Big show, some other guests possible, and your phone calls all show. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie, 888-729-9494. For more perspective on the Phillies, the man that brought this whole thing together this offseason, Phillies general manager Matt Klintak with us here. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie. Matt, wonderful to see you.
Nice to be here. Thanks for having me on, guys.
It is. I'll tell you, man, it's funny. I remember, John and I remember, right as free agency was about to launch, I guess maybe a day or two before it began, you joined our program, which we were, you know, we're happy to get you on, and we knew you had big plans, and you were very clear that, you know, big hopes, big dreams, big plans for the offseason. Did the acquisitions that occurred exceed even the expectations realistically that you thought you could do?
Oh, good question. Probably. I think the best way I can answer that is, even at the outset of the offseason, when I met with you guys, or when we talked about things with our scouts and talked about them internally and established goals with our owners, as clear as those goals may have been, there still aren't faces on those, you know, or names on the, attached to the things we're trying to achieve. So, you know, there, at that stage, it would have been hard to say it's going to be Harper, it's going to be Realmuto or McCutchen or anything else we did. So, but the key principles we talked about, and I'm sure we did on the show, I don't recall exactly, but we're talking about improving the offense, improving the defense for sure. That was a big one for us, and trying to get better in the back end of the bullpen. So every opportunity that we explored in the offseason was designed to achieve one of those things, or at least one of those things. The Seattle trade actually kind of helped in all three of those areas. But that became our focal point. So while we may not have known exactly what order some of these things would take place, we may not have known if they would come in the form of a free agent signing or a trade, may not have known exactly who the players were going to be, you know, those were the goals that we set out. So from that perspective, you know, what we did does not surprise, but, you know, the fact that we were able to do as many things as we did was certainly, that was the goal, and we're happy with what we were able to deliver.
We talked to David Robertson yesterday, and he said part of what attracted him to Philly is that this team is going for it. Has Philadelphia become a destination city because we're going for it?
That's probably a better question for the players to answer, you know, especially the guys like that did join this year. You know, I think about a guy like Segura. You know, he had to waive a no-trade clause to come here. So he, in some respects, chose to do this.
Yeah.
McCutchen chose to sign here. Robertson chose to sign here. Harper chose to sign here. And I'm not naive. We offered them a lot of money,
sure,
too. I get that part of it. But
I'll sign here, too, Matt, if you want to give me $330 million. Yeah, by the way, I'll take $329 just for the record.
Yeah.
talk to our owners, yeah.
That'll get you fired, by the way. You signed the camera for $329. Box, that'll get you fired.
I think that's probably right.
It would.
You'd be happy. So, you know, I think the only guy that really didn't have a say in it so much would have been Realmuto, right? But he seems very happy. So, I mean, I hope so. I mean, I think that's the goal as you're building a team. You want to create an environment that players are excited to join. Right? You know, your current players are excited to come back every year, come to spring training. You know, they're invested in the progress of the team, and the guys from the outside take notice and say, that's a place I want to come. And, you know, I think the ultimate manifestation of that is when someone like Cliff Lee, you know, signs with the Philadelphia Phillies for less than he was offered elsewhere,
sure,
because he wanted to join that rotation in that environment. You know, that's probably the exception, not the rule, but certainly we can work to build the core of the team in such a way and build the culture in such a way that it is appealing to players.
You know, it's interesting, Matt, you bring that up because it almost sounds like you're describing a connectivity. Well, one move can doesn't necessarily, but can influence other moves. Did you view the Real Muto acquisition prior to making it? I think this is something a lot of people have wondered. As a potential extra pathway to Harper?
Well, I don't know if that's, I can say that directly. We're aware that, you know, last summer Harper was kind of publicly lobbying for the Nationals to trade for Real Muto, and the two of them were close. So, like, there was an awareness there on our part that those two guys were, you know, were close and respected each other as players. I don't know that there was that direct of a tie, though, because really, at that stage, that was, you know, the week before we came down to spring training, there were still a number of big free agents out there, Bryce included, that we were still talking to, and we kind of had to make the Real Muto trade in a vacuum. You know, do we want this guy? Do we not? Does he help our team? Is the return appropriate? We had to make that with the understanding that we may or may not land another free agent, you know, after this. And you know, we obviously chose to make the trade. Thought it was a good value and a good deal for our club. Certainly makes us better. He's the best catcher in the league. But if that played even a small role in helping to convince Bryce Harper to come here, then that's great. You know, I'd be lying if I said that was the driving force behind that trade. It was not. It was in a vacuum. It was a good decision, we believe, to add JT Real Muto.
If what gives you guys so much faith in the young pitchers not named Aaron Nola on this staff?
I think there are a few things. Number one, for 4.5 months last year, we were one of the best rotations in baseball, driven certainly by Nola and, you know, and Arrieta doing his thing. But really, Eflin Velasquez and Pivetta were, you know, a big reason why our club was in first place into mid-August, and they faltered. And I'm not going to shy away from that. They faltered, and frankly, our entire team faltered. But what I think is, all three of those guys have, you know, I'm going to get a little scouty here, but they have top-notch stuff, like big fastballs, big breaking balls. They know how to pitch. They're still young. There's a lot to really like about them. And when I know we didn't change the personnel in the starting rotation from last year to this. I understand why that may be frustrating to some fans that say, you know, what the heck? Like, these guys struggled down the stretch. We need to get better. We didn't change the personnel on the mound, but you know what we did do? We changed the defense behind them. We changed the bullpen that comes into the game after them, and we improved the offense, which gives them a heck of a lot more margin for error. So I actually believe that we did a lot to improve and bolster the rotation without actually changing any of the names.
There's one notable starter available still out there. Is there any chance that you would add to this staff at this point?
I think right now we are focused on our guys. We made something like 16 cuts yesterday to get it down to our group, and we are focused on these guys.
Matt Klintak with us here, Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie in Clearwater. Matt, you know, you bring up the bullpen. David Robertson, we spoke to him yesterday, and he referenced that he's not the closer. He's going to be a guy that will close from time to time. Obviously, others will be involved. Sir Anthony, I'm sure, most notably as well. Organizationally, do you view the closer role as one that the organization does not want to designate a closer? Or if you had the guy that, if you had Mariano Rivera, would he be someone in a high-leverage situation in the seventh inning? You'd say, we're going to put Rivera in the seventh inning with three on and one out because we need an out right now. Or if you had the ultimate closer, you'd say, this is our closer.
Yeah, it all depends on your personnel. If we had Mariano Rivera, he'd close for us, and he'd close for the rest of his career.
And I just want to go to an extreme example.
He's the best of all time, and sure, it doesn't even have to be that extreme. There are plenty of guys that, if we had them, that they would be the closer. And I'm very open to having a designated closer with a capital C, and you know what? So is Cap. And it doesn't mean that even last year when, you know, we had, I forget, you know, half dozen or so guys achieve a save for us, Sir Anthony was our closer for, well, we started with Neris. Neris was our closer. He got every save opportunity early. He ultimately faltered. We went to more of a committee approach for a while things were settling in. Sir Anthony comes up. Sir Anthony's, you know, who's never pitched in the big leagues. He's only thrown, 10 innings in AAA. ease him in a little, which I frankly think is the right way to go about that.
Sure.
I don't think calling a kid up that quickly and putting him in the ninth inning in a, you know, in a, is the right way to go. He clearly demonstrates that he's fantastic, you know, in a variety of different roles. And by early summer, he's pitching the ninth for us more often than not. So we had a closer for most of the year. So I am, you know, getting back to your question about Robertson, I am, whether it's Sir Anthony, whether it's Robertson, whether it's Neris, my guess is as the season shakes out, we will have more structure to the back of the game than the perception may be. I don't know which guy that's going to be. You know, we never do. You know, it could be that Pat Neshek is back to being what he was a couple years ago and his nails against everybody, right, left, strikeouts, pop-ups, and he settles in as our highest leverage guy, you know, in the eighth inning, and or maybe not. So we've got a lot of depth in our pen. We've got a lot of unique looks, guys who do it a little differently. Certainly Neshek is probably the most unique of that look, but guys with different breaking balls, different types of fastballs, different handedness, and that allows us to put guys in positions to succeed. But the goal is never to it's not an aggressive goal to not name a closer. That's not the point.
Sure.
It's,
okay.
We want to do, you know, whatever's best, and if one guy settles into that, that's great. We'd be happy to have that.
What are your expectations for Scott Kingery this season?
You know, I mean, I think Scott Kingery is a really important player for us, both this year and for the foreseeable future. And we have to continue to, you know, challenge him and get him reps where we can, but also, you know, make sure we're doing what's right for the team. And, you know, right now, I think Scott Kingery, you know, on the team, playing some third, playing some short, playing some second, playing some outfield, is going to be a really vital role. And this is not just in Philadelphia. Throughout baseball, the notion of versatile players, versatility, guys who can do a lot of different things, they're critical to a well-functioning roster, particularly a roster like ours, which is going to likely carry a short bench for much of the year. We'll more than likely have a 4-man bench and a 13-man bullpen, or 13-man pitching staff, I should say. So I think Kingery is going to be a real key to our team. I don't think, you know, if he performs well, or there's an injury or something, we could see him lining up every day at the same position like we did last summer at shortstop. But I think in the early stages, we're likely to see him playing, you know, little third, little day at second or short. If Segura Hernandez need a day off, a day in the outfield, probably getting pinch hit or pinch running appearances every day, and we'll get into the flow of that. And as the season unwinds through injuries and performance fluctuations, we'll just have to adjust. But he's a big part of this, even if, you know, he doesn't look to be a quote unquote starter at one position.
Is this a make or break year for Mikel Franco?
I don't know the answer to that. I think Mikel Franco, you know, has settled in the last few years to be a pretty good offensive player. I know there are some people that think he can and will be more. He's still young. This is a crazy thing. That's when guys debut in the big leagues as young as Mikel did, for example, it's easy to sort of cast them to the side and say, oh, he's not going to get it. He's not getting any better. Forget it. He's 26, you know, and there are still a lot of guys that are improving at that juncture of their careers. And, you know, Mikel, we had this kind of a very similar conversation with him at the end of last year. Like, if you want to, you know, kick your career into gear, the off season is really important for you. You know, what your work habits, your eating habits, your, you know, just the way you're taking care of yourself and positioning yourself to come in for a productive and strong season. And he did all that. So, you know, I'm not going to sit here and guarantee we're going to get 100 OPS points better from Mikel Franco this year. I don't know that, but I don't think it's crazy when you look at his skill set, when you look at the type of condition he's in, when you look at his age, that he's, you know, still in a juncture where he could get better. And when you look at some of the lineup protection around him, I don't think it's crazy to think Franco could have an improved year this year.
Right. So with this influx of talent, is the bar raised for Gabe Kapler? Your expectations for him, have they increased as well?
I mean, I always have high expectations of any manager. And I had high expectations of Gabe last year. I also had an understanding early, even when we hired him and before we hired him, that a rookie manager is not going to be flawless. That's why there's some value in hiring managers who have managed in the big leagues before. Charlie Manuel walked in here and had managed the Cleveland Indians before he got here. So there's a learning curve. There's an element to the job that Charlie, for example, didn't have to learn on the fly in Philadelphia. Cap had to go through that. Cap went through it in some high-profile ways early in the year, and he handled him pretty well as you could expect somebody to handle him, and he learned from him. I'm expecting Cap to continue to he'll make adjustments based on what he learned last year. I think the team the way the team is constructed this year is going to lend itself to fewer lineup changes and early inning pinch hitters and fewer bullpen, I don't know what the word is, but bullpen challenges that he dealt with last year. The reality is, and I am fully supportive of Cap in this, last year, the talent level of our team wasn't enough to go compete with the big dogs in the National League. The only chance we had, we knew this in spring training, the only chance we were going to have was to try to try different things and be more creative than everybody else and try to piece together enough wins last year to maintain our competitiveness. And you know what? We did it for 4.5 months. And then eventually the depth and the talent base, was just not there. And it's different. It's unique. I know it's highly scrutinized. I know it's not traditional. It's not the way Charlie or Bo or Dallas Green. I know it's not the way these guys manage the game. But if we look around the league, guys, Cap's not that out there. He's not that revolutionary relative to the other stuff that's going on around the league. So having said all that, I do think this year's roster is going to lend itself to a little bit more of a traditional approach. And I think Cap's very understanding of that. So we'll see. That's a
Matt,
long,
6 days
way
from now. No, it makes sense. 6 days from now, this thing gets jumping. It's going to be a sold-out Citizens Bank Park. You looking forward to just everything up ahead?
Oh, hell yeah. This is going to be the coolest opening day I've ever had anywhere, certainly with the Phillies, but any time in my career. I haven't been back there ever since we signed Harper, but every day we get the reports about ticket sales and jersey sales and just the hype and, not only what it means for opening day, but what it means for Saturday and Sunday, the Sunday night baseball game. And I think we may sell out the whole weekend.
Yeah, it's awesome.
And that's just, it's awesome. I'm excited to get it going. I know the players are. This is always we're just kind of now wrapping up that phase of spring training where there's always kind of a letdown. You're excited early in camp. Then you've got kind of that middle where you kind of let your guard down a little. And then at the end, you get pumped again. You can see the finish line. You know you're a week away. So we're starting to see that guys put up 13 runs yesterday. It's like, all right, I think we're walking in here a little bit. So I'm jacked up. I think it's going to be really fun to get home.
Matt, congrats on a terrific offseason and obviously the real work, starts for the team up ahead here. Good luck this season. You got a lot of people obviously behind the organization hoping for great things and looking forward to seeing it all back live in Philly real soon.
Me too. Thanks, guys.
There he is.
Thanks,
Philly's general manager, Matt Klintak, Joe to Camera, and John Ritchie. Keep it here on 94 WIP.
You still haven't taken care of that.
Well, Matt Bauer, like, made it the open, is very, disappointed that you don't like it. So,
well, I mean, it doesn't.
It's a tough conversation to have. Hey, Matt, Joe hates what you did.
No, I don't hate what he does. I'm saying, Seltzer, get on it.
All right.
Good Lord, don't pass the buck. All right, let's get to it. Drop of the week. What are our options this week,
Seltzer? We got a good week of drops. A couple that aren't going to win but just were funny that we grabbed. After Bryce Harper's first single, Joe DeCamera decides,
he's worth it! He is worth it. You know what was weird, James? I heard people later in the week say that Harper did not get a hit there.
A minor league game. He got a hit in a minor league game, and then he got his first hit in an actual official spring training game the next day.
That clears it up. So he's worth it. All right, that's okay.
He's worth it. Also, you told me to do this at some point.
Seltzer, get me a bucket.
Yeah. I don't remember why. It works, though.
Seltzer, get me a bucket. Because Richie said something like, let's put cold water over him or something.
Yes. Okay. Well,
Seltzer, give me a bucket.
To get out of context
one.
Drop.
I like that one. Yeah, that too.
Let me hear that one more. Let me hear that one more time. Seltzer, get me a bucket. That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, solid. Okay. You also had this when Richie was trying to give his fact.
I don't know much. Don't try to trick me. Just go ahead. Finish your freaking facts.
Okay.
I think this part theoretically could be a drop.
Finish your freaking facts.
Okay.
Decent.
Well, I'm glad you chose that part instead of the part when I said I don't know much.
That's true.
Oh, I prefer that.
Yeah.
I don't know much.
There we go. Good. I like it. Richie apparently is an ogre. This happened this week.
I'm like an ogre.
Oh, boy.
Good to know. Also, we had this, and then we'll get to our real contenders for the week. But this was fun as well. Richie, as is his way, loses his voice a little bit.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are we doing today?
Doing great, Ben.
Ooh, sorry about that. Jeez.
It's unbelievable.
Doing great, Ben. Ooh, sorry about that. Jeez.
That's awesome.
Pretty good. Pretty good. All right. And then we have one more and then our finalists here. One more I have to play just because it happened yesterday. It was pretty great. You guys, this isn't a drop as much, but you guys were on the air when Bryce Harper decided to go yard.
Oh,
wow.
Right field. That thing
just,
might go. And
he just pounded a homer. Holy cow.
He got the turkey bowl.
Wow.
He demolished that thing, man.
Good stuff there.
Okay. My energy was low. I don't know why.
Yeah, Richie's energy was there.
Yeah.
All right.
I don't know why.
It was, seriously, that's one of the most memorable things we've seen as a show.
I agree.
That was historic.
I totally agree.
All right, so we have three contenders for the winner. I think we all know what's going to win, but Joe, you do have two good drops that will stay in the rotation. This is a classic from you.
John, I'm such an idiot.
You are.
Okay. John, I'm such an idiot.
It's a very weird way of saying it.
It is very weird.
What are you doing?
Okay, this one is also great because this is from before. This has already happened weeks and weeks ago on the show. We had this. Okay, so then this week you took another stab.
Krzyzewski V. I got it.
I love the I got it at the end.
Krzyzewski V. Krzyzewski. I got it.
Notice and beat the hammer. I just said Coach K.
You did not have it.
All right, what else? What else?
And then our
wrap
winner,
this up, please.
Our winner, if we gave a drop C for drop of the year, this is in the running, the great Charlie Manuel.
I'd say he's tied in a rectum, yeah.
Oh, man.
I'd say he's tied in a rectum, yeah.
Referring to my batting stance.
Wow.
And to your yes.
Wow.
Right, I'd say he's tied in a rectum, yeah.
Well, there you go.
That's our winner.
All right, there it is. 888-729-9494. I love Phil Seltzer just appoints it the winner without us even voting.
Would you guys agree?
I would agree.
I think that's the winner.
I would agree. Yeah. Joining us right now. See, joining us right now, I believe he is. Look at this, John, who's walking into the booth right here. How about the Phillies' legendary skipper and, of course, special advisor to the general manager, one of our all-time favorites in Philadelphia sports history, the great Charlie Emanuel. Charlie, how are you, sir?
Doing great.
Wonderful
doing
to see you.
Good to see you.
How you been, Charlie?
I've been good.
Saw you down there watching the guys in the cage. What are you seeing down there today?
I saw some guys take some swings getting ready for the season to start. You know, like come out in their regular routine.
They look better than me in fantasy camp?
Just a little bit. wasn't much difference.
I appreciate that. I paid him for that answer, John. I had to slip Charlie a 20 to give me a pro-me answer. Yeah. I appreciate that.
Charlie, speaking of fantasy camp, is it true that Joe has a tight butt?
Yeah, I would say Joe gets a little tight. I'd say he gets tight in a rectum, yeah.
That's good.
You were saying I need to loosen up there. I need it to, like Schmitty, give it a little wiggle or something. Right. That might help me, right?
Yeah. You gotta put a little bit into it. It is a little, a little movement, a little wiggle. Loosen up. Take a deep breath.
Man, Charlie, I'm taking my 20 bucks back. I think I just lost you right there. All right, Charlie, let's get to the present day squad. The energy in camp. I mean, you've seen it when it's the organization's flying high, and then not as much. What's this camp been like, and how it compares to in the last three or so years when obviously it just was not the same kind of squad?
I think the four players that we added, like this winter, and of course Harp finished it off for his signing of him.
Yeah,
I feel like it. We really stepped up our offense. We got basically more solid contact hitters. We have a chance to score more runs, And the guys that hit high in our lineup last year, that, you know, like they're going to be down toward the bottom.
Yeah.
And that's going to make a big difference offensively. And I think any time that you add offense and you and expectations jump up like they have been, and the fact that the Phillies fans are who they are, you know, like they're going to be backing us all the way. I think you're going to see a lot of energy at the ballpark. And I think we're going to compete all year long.
What impresses you most about how Bryce hits?
I think it has he works the count good. He's got good plate coverage. He has his philosophy. He has an idea on what he's doing at the plate, and I think it you put him in our lineup, and I think that he's going to be real good. He's strong. He's very strong. He can hit a home run all to left or right or center, all over the big part of the park, and I think that he's ideal for Philadelphia.
Is his swing too violent to be sustainable long term?
I don't. I think that he's in the prime of his career, and you know, like he's already had seasons where you know, like where he's hit 300, or and so therefore, you know, like it's just a matter of him just being a little bit more consistent, stroking the ball, especially with two strikes on him, things like that, and you'll see. Probably he's about. If he hits like anywhere from 15, 20 balls, you know, like you know, a little bit harder during the season, he'll get more consistent in his hitting, and you'll see more homers, and you'll see a higher batting average.
Charlie, yeah. I'd like to take you back to a moment. Bryce Harper's first year in the big leagues with the Nationals. Cole Hamels, of course, hits him. Harper on first, a couple batters later, he's on third, ends up stealing home. I mean, which is really rare, you know, ever, but especially in this era of baseball, steals home, scores a run. Just curious if you can remember back to that moment in the dugout. I mean, what you were thinking, were you like, man, damn, this guy got us? I mean, we hit him and he comes all the way around and sticks it up, you know, with the stealing home. What do you remember that moment?
You know, he did not, Hamels hit him. I didn't know he was going to hit him.
Yep.
You know, like
you would never order that, Charlie.
And I'm not saying I wouldn't order that. at the same time, I did not order that one. but anyway, you know, like he got on and, you know, like he was determined that he was, you know, like he kept his cool. And he got back at us, you know, like we're way that a professional is supposed to. You know, he stole second. Then when he got to third, he came home. And surprisingly, when he stole home, I was kind of surprised at that, really.
Yeah, sure. Me too.
Yeah, no
question. We all were. So another newcomer, Andrew McCutchen, what does he bring to the top of the lineup?
I think it last year, I think it when Kutch went to San Francisco, I think it. I remember Aaron Rowan signing and going to San Francisco after having a big season with us. And Kutch kind of falls in that range, you know, like San Francisco's real big field. It's definitely big from left field to right center. And I think it balls that McCutchen's going to hit in Philadelphia, some of them's going to find a fence. And I think, over the fence. And I think it, once he went to the Yankees, he definitely ended the season, you know, like on a high note. I think he's going to have a better year, a much better year than he had last year, as far as, you know, like production and at batting average, on base percentage, stuff like that. He's going to have a big season for us, I think.
That's huge. And Odubel needs to have a more consistent season for us. What does he need to do to achieve that?
I think I don't know if I would ask Odubel to be a disciplined hitter because, you know, like he is a unique kind of hitter. He's the kind of guy that he's going to chase bad balls. But the best part about him, he's got great eye-hand coordination. He's got strong hands and legs, and he puts a ball in play. He swings to hit the ball. He doesn't try to hold up.
Yep.
You know, like he swings, he's going to hit the ball when he swings. So therefore, you know, like he's a guy that can, he'll take a ball inside and hit it to left field. He'll take a ball kind of out away from him and pull it down the right field line. And that's kind of who he is. And the fact that that he can control the bat, he just needs to have a little bit more discipline at the plate. Mm-hmm. And when I say that, I would never want to get him where he feels defensive. I want him to stay offensive, but at the same time, you know, like if he is selection-wise, especially when he's up in the count is when he hits his homers. If you go back and he hit 22 or 23 home runs last year. And I've talked to him for the last 3 years about, you know, catching balls out front like 1-0, 2-0, 2-1, 3-1, things like that, and just being smooth in his swing and have more control of his swing. Huh. He catches balls out front. He's very capable of putting up some real good numbers.
Yeah, sure. And Scott Kingery, what have you seen from him this spring?
He's cut some of the lift in his swing out, you know, like more. He started getting stiff. He started trying to find a launch angle where he could get, you know, really help the ball up in the air. He's gotten back to the way he hit it 2 years ago when he was in the minor leagues and also at the start of spring training last year. He's trying to work his way back to there. And I've been watching him now for the last 2 weeks hit a lot, and he's definitely working to get there. I think that Scott's got a bright future ahead of him, and I think that he, once he finds that swing where he was successful with, and which it should be, I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but he should definitely have a knowledge and stuff to you like to understand and find that swing.
Yeah, I love talking and hitting with Charlie. Charlie Emanuel with
Amazing.
Us here. Joe DeCameron, John Rich on WIP from Clearwater. You know, it's funny, Charlie, all this conversation we've had over the last couple of days and weeks about the Phils, because of all the newcomers and how good so many of them are, Rhys Hoskins has kind of been lost in the shuffle, I think, of at least the conversations we've had at times. As he enters year three for him in the big leagues, his second full year up ahead, as you project his future, how good can Rhys Hoskins become?
Yeah, he can be, I think last year, the second half of the season, you know, like I think if you ask him, he definitely thinks he could is better than that. You know, like he definitely, you know, like he got off to a good start, and at the end, you know, like I think he was trying too hard. I think he was trying to help too much, and he started wanting to hit home runs instead of just having control of his swing. I used to see him play in the minor leagues. I never talked to him hardly ever about his hitting. But I used to tell him just to keep your same demeanor that you have and the same approach at the plate and your thought process, and you were going to be very good. And I think it, with the addition of the four players that we added and the fact that it's going to take some, you know, like he now can just relax and go out there and play, like kind of let his ability, you know, like carry him, you know, like get back to who he was from in a thought process way. I think he's going to put up some numbers.
That's awesome.
And finally, Charlie, one of your former players being honored by the Phillies this year, coming up in August, and announced this week, Bobby Abreu into the Phillies Wall of Fame. Press conference later on today, and just your thoughts on Abreu and his contributions going into the Phillies Wall of Fame.
Joe, Bobby Abreu, when I first got the Phillies job, I looked. The first thing I noticed was Bobby Abreu and Jimmy Rollins had played for like 4 years in a row without missing a game. And I thought to myself, wow, I mean, nowadays that's pretty special. And the more that I was around him and I watched him play, he knows a whole lot about hitting. He's a disciplined player. I think his numbers speaks for itself. I think his numbers gets overlooked and he's one of those players, you know, like it, that hasn't, you know, like really hadn't got – the dues that was due to him, as far as, you know, like being a professional hitter and how good he works the count, how good he is in the game, hitting 300 and hitting the ball hard, hitting 30 homers. You know, here's a guy hits 30 home runs and was never talked about as being a home run hitter or nothing, or actually was never acknowledged of a 30 home run guy. And he definitely deserves to be on the wall. He definitely is one of the Phillies' top players in the last 20 years or 25 years, whatever. And definitely deserving it. And I'm kind of really happy about it.
Good stuff, Charlie. Always
wonderful,
phenomenal seeing you. Yeah. We'll see you up in Philly.
I like to say yesterday, who was putting on a show with a fanatic?
Richie.
No.
Come on, what did everyone know? Was there a spotlight here on me dancing on the field?
I didn't get to see it, but you know Richie, but really.
You heard a lot of complaints about the
you know what I heard
the attempt that Joe made out there.
What is this nonsense?
Actually, you know, like I heard it wasn't really Richie wasn't really, you know, really bright or into it or you know, like
John had his skit, I had my skit. You know, what are you going to do?
What
are you going to do? Charlie, I just got to get better swing if I'm down here next year in fantasy camp. Better swing and less injuries.
Yeah.
Charlie, it's awesome. Always great seeing you.
Good
luck with
the upcoming season. Always good for you to have me, man. Appreciate it.
There he is, the legend, the Phillies Wall of Famer himself, Hall of Famer, Charlie Emanuel. All right, back with Beat the Hammer, Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on a busy Friday afternoon. Remember, Matt Klintak in a half an hour at 12:30. Keep it here. Beat the Hammers next. All righty. So I didn't give out the phone number going to break for the contest line for Beat the Hammer for a contestant, but people were calling anyway. And Seltzer went with the caller that called in. His name is Channing in Mount Airy. Channing, welcome to Beat the Hammer. You were on your toes thinking wise there.
Yeah. What's going on, guys? What's up, Johnny? I feel bad about yesterday, man, naming Dexter Jackson on you.
Oh, yeah, it's all right.
I loved it, Channing. All right, Channing, let me put you on hold for 1 second. That was funny. We'll get back to Channing. He'll be competing in a moment. Gary in Whitehall. Gary, if I win, you win, which means you're going to the concert.
I'll just book it now.
Book it, Gary. That thing's coming up. All right, hang on a second, Gary. Let's bring Channing back in. I'm going to turn it over to Seltzer. I'm going to step. We don't have a soundproof booth. We just have outside this room where I won't be able to hear anything.
Yeah, just go away.
Close door. I'm out of here. Good luck, Channing.
Get out of the room. All right, this is good. Channing, we know, a great caller to the show. He knows his sports. This is exciting. Richie, you got the clock ready to go?
I do.
All right, Channing, you will have 45 seconds. As you know, 5 questions. The clock will start as soon as the first question is asked. Our category, could have seen it coming. We're doing a little NCAA tournament action today for Beat the Hammer. Channing, are you ready to play
Beat the Hammer? Yeah, I'm ready. Let's go.
All right, here we go. Beat the Hammer again. The clock will start as soon as I ask the first question. Question number one. Here we go. What school was the last to win back-to-back NCAA championships?
The school that won back-to-back. Kentucky.
Oops, sorry, that is actually wrong. My fault. I hit the wrong button. Only 3 head coaches have reached the Final Four more than 10 times. Name 2 of the 3.
Coach K. And Rick Pitino.
In 1956, this NBA legend set the still-standing record with 27 rebounds in a single Final Four game. Name him.
Pass.
This school's 2013 NCAA championship title recently became the first to be vacated. Name that school.
The first to be vacated.
There's time. That was Louisville.
Louisville.
So we'll put you on old, Channing. Let's hope against hope here. He has had some rough ones. The first one was Florida, by the way. I hit the wrong button there, the Gators. Channing, we'll put you on
hold.
Yeah,
that kind of took some time.
Yeah, that was a little, it didn't take much time there. You talk about when I screwed it up, I said it quickly.
Yeah, I was just worried about it. I was wondering if I should pause the timer and let it run.
It was like a half second. I don't think it's a huge deal. I can try and make a mistake for Joe to even it out.
Yeah, that'd be good. That'd be good. He'd be outraged.
Still looking.
I'll go
good.
Get him.
Yes. Richie has to go get the hammer, has to leave the room. We banished Joe from the room as he is going to get the hammer and get this Beat the Hammer contest going. Is the hammer
Alrighty.
Back?
He's back. So could you hear anything?
No. What's the deal?
That's good. So you have no idea.
I have no idea. By the way, James, are we still at 45 seconds or did we increase this?
We didn't. We should moving forward. I forgot. I don't know what Richie did. I can't see his clock. I'm guessing he did 45.
I had not.
Okay, so next week we will move forward to 50, but it is still 45 for this one.
Okay, no problem.
All right, you ready to roll?
What topic?
The topic, of course, as you could guess, the NCAA tournament.
Oh, okay. Let's go.
Ready to roll?
Yeah.
All right, question number one.
Oh, by the way, how'd this guy do?
Question number one.
How did he do?
Here we go. What school was the last to win back-to-back NCAA championships?
Florida.
Only 3 head coaches have reached the Final Four more than 10 times. Name 2 of the 3.
Wooden. Coach K.
In 1956, this NBA legend set the still-standing record with 27 rebounds in a single Final Four game. Name him.
Bill Russell.
This school's 2013 NCAA title recently became the first title to be vacated. Name that school.
UConn.
In the late 1960s, this player won the tournament's Most Outstanding Player Award, a still-standing record 3 times in a row. Name him.
Late 60s?
Yes.
Walton.
Still a handy 3-0 victory for the Hammer.
Who the hell won three times in the late 60s?
Kareem Abdul-Jabbar.
I knew that one, Joe.
Louisville, the school to recently get their title victory.
Yeah, Louisville. Yep.
3-0,
all right,
Victor.
I am officially upping the count to 50 seconds.
Fair. Yeah, 50's fair.
For next week.
So what happened? Channing was just terrible?
Not his finest hour.
I mean, apparently not. We welcome Channing.
He was not terrible.
Well, he went 0 for 5.
Big college basketball. I'm more of an NFL NBA guy. But
all right. Well, hey Channing. Hey Channing. I want you to repeat after me.
No, don't do it.
86-9. Just say it. 86-9.
He doesn't have to do that.
Say it, Channing.
Don't do it.
what did he say?
No, nothing.
86-9.
A hammer is a tool. He said. Repeat.
Is that your record?
Of course that's my record, 86-9. Hey, Channing, you've been hammered. Scram! I haven't used that one in a while.
What are you doing with your eyes right now?
Well, we got some sun coming in. Gary
no,
Whitehall,
a
little bit. Gary, congratulations. You're going to see Kiss.
Thank you. Detroit Rock City, baby.
All right, Gary, we're going to put you on hold. We'll get your information. With that, we shut down that music. Beat the hammer, 86-9. Seltzer playing time's yours.
It's a total mess.
I'll end it. You ready? All right.
Joe, read the screen again. I want to see what you were doing with your eyes.
I was squinting. Yeah. Are you taking a picture of me? Okay. Look at you. Take a picture of me. What a creep. We are joined by one of the great Phil's ball players of all time, former Phil's manager, coach, and special advisor to the general manager, the great Larry Boa. Bo, how are you, pal?
I'm doing very good. Everything's falling into place here.
Good.
Looking forward to the season to start.
Passionate WIP conversation as always. People, you know, riled up about Martellis. You know, I mean, it's, you went through that, Larry. How tough is that?
It's tough. I mean, this is a guy that's basically been there his whole life.
Yeah.
And to have something like that happen, I mean, Philly's pretty loyal, you know, the fans. And they like people that, blue-collar people. I mean, Martelli was, I like Martelli
I did
a lot.
Too.
I like him a lot.
I did too. Larry Bo with us. Larry, it was interesting. Bryce Harper signed, obviously, a couple weeks ago. Noticed, I think it might have been his first day in uniform. You and him, it was captioned on television. You're walking in right field, and you and Bryce Harper are having a conversation. And we're all wondering, wow, what's going on in that conversation? About 50 years with the Phil, Larry with all this Phil's history and knowledge and passion, and the new guy, biggest contract in organization history. What do you share with Bryce Harper in a moment?
I was telling him a little bit about the city of Philadelphia and the fans, you know, how passionate they are. And during the course of the season, they're going to be a little disgruntled, not only with him, but a lot of people. That's just the fan base. I mean, I told him, I said, you can't take anything like that personal. If you're playing in Philadelphia and you're a star like he is and you go 0 for 12 and you pop up a few times with the bases loaded, you're going to hear some boos. That's just a normal reaction. But also you're going to hear how when you do things, how this city can really treat you like royalty. And I said, you're going to have a lot of that. And it's just, just stay grounded and don't worry about things that you have no control over. Because in Washington, it's pretty low-key, let's face it. You could strike out 12 times in a row, and nobody's going to say anything.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's not like that in Philly. But I do think that the fans make you, when you take that field, you better be prepared, and I think that's a big plus, I think, for guys that have never been through that. I mean, when you walk through those doors and you see the Citizens Bank ballpark filled, you get that adrenaline rush before a pitch is thrown, and I think he's going to love that.
I've read that you are a fan of Bryce Harper's mentality. What makes it different? What makes you a fan? And is he a little more old school?
He's very old school. But he knows the history of the game, not just because he came to Philadelphia. He knows who played here, what they did. He knows back in the day who played for the Yankees, who played for the Braves. I mean, this guy's a baseball freak, really. And he likes to play baseball. He likes to talk about baseball. I mean, he's sitting on the bench, and guy's warming up, and he goes, man, this guy's throwing a lot of split fingers here. And I mean, he's studying the game, which, to me, a lot of young guys, you know, after they get their at-bat, they're sitting down talking to their buddy and that. This guy's locked in, and I think it's going to spread. And you get a catcher now that he's really impressed me a lot, Realmuto. He's another guy that likes to talk baseball. So you got some guys that Matt did a great job in picking up, not only good baseball players, but they have good character, and they're good in that clubhouse. McCutchen is another one. Robertson, Segura. I mean, if we didn't get Harper, I thought we could have won our division without that. And the fact that we got him, I'll be shocked. I'm telling you right now, barring injuries, if we don't not only get in the playoffs, but if we don't go deep, I'll be disappointed. I like this team that much.
Wow.
I really like this team a lot. I like the makeup of the ball club. I like the way they approach the game. And I'm looking forward to a very good summer in Philadelphia.
Is Real Muto the best athlete you've seen playing catcher?
Yeah, right now he is. I mean, when I look at all the catchers, this guy runs good for a catcher. He throws. He's a tough out. You know, I don't know where Gabe's going to hit him in the lineup. You could probably hit him anywhere in the middle there. But this guy, he's another guy. He wants to play every game. You know, obviously, that's not going to happen playing that position. But he takes a lot of pride. I've watched him even in spring training. If he gives up four or five runs in an inning, he comes in and he's very disgusted. Not with the pitcher. I think he's blaming himself on some pitch selection. I think he's beating himself up sometimes. And it's hard down here to get a good read. You know, the wind's blowing out. Guy makes a good pitch, and he beats it off the dirt here, and it bounces over the third baseman's head. But I honestly believe this guy would rather catch a shutout and win than get three hits and lose.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
Larry, of course, you know, star shortstop for the Phillies, Jimmy Rollins last few years as well, and now Segura. He's been lost in the shuffle because all the other guys. How good, in your opinion, is as a guy to play shortstop so well, how good is Segura?
He's real good out there. He, you know, his range, because of the data that we have now, where to play hitters and that, I don't think that's going to be a big issue. But the thing that impresses me is he's got a great two-strike approach. He doesn't like striking out. Check his hits out every year. He's like 180 or above. He's a tough out. And I think right now Gabe has him penciled in to hit second, which would be very good in our batting order. But you can, if he comes up with runners in second and third, there's a good chance he's putting the ball in play. He's not bringing the bat back. And you need those kind of hitters in that lineup because we got some guys, let's face it, they're going to strike out a few times. But you get this guy up with men in scoring position, he's going to put the ball in play. He's very smart. He's a very heady baseball player. And he's really happy to be here. You know, coming from Seattle, that was the long summer last year, and he sees what's going on here. All those guys that we got, they feel it in the clubhouse. You can feel the vibe. It's a lot different. They don't go out there enough saying, well, I hope we can win. They expect to win. And I think the fans of Philadelphia are going to like that.
I'm really interested in your assessment of Segura. That's fascinating to me. If we had a time machine and we could go back to Larry Boa, the player, comparing skill sets to Gene Segura, the player, how do you guys match up?
Well, I know I run better than him. I know that. I probably don't hit with the power that he has.
You're more feisty, right?
Yeah, I'm a little bit more feisty. He's pretty low-key. But Segura's the kind of guy that could play 20 years ago. He can play 20 years from now. He's a baseball player. And I think we overlook that fact sometimes. We get caught up in, oh, his skill set. You know, he's a 5-tool player. Yeah, he's a 5-tool player, but he leaves 4 of the tools in the shed every night. I want a guy that comes out here every night and uses all his tools. And you're going to see him do that. He can steal a base when you need a stolen base. He's not going to steal 50 bases. But your tight game in the 7th or 8th inning and a pitcher gives him one look over there, he'll steal second base. He'll make all the plays. And I just think he's been around the game long enough to know how to play hitters. And like I said, with the information we have, he's very sure-handed as a shortstop. That's a big position to fill that we had a void last year because we used a lot of guys, and I think that's be a perfect match for us.
Larry Bo with us here, Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie, and Clearwater. All right, Larry, pitchers 3, 4, and 5 in the starting rotation. Are they good enough?
Well, right now, the 3 pitcher, from what I understand, oh, maybe I shouldn't even say this. Have they announced who's pitching? Oh, I better not say it. No, I think our 3, 4, 5 are good enough. I do. I'm concerned a little bit with Vinny, not with his stuff. This guy's got big league stuff. What I'm concerned about, I watched yesterday's game, and he had an overpowering fastball, yet he pitched 3 1/3 innings and had over 70 pitches. And I think a lot of this stuff is mental with him. I think he gives hitters too much credit. He doesn't realize how good that fastball plays. He's got a good breaking ball. And a good thing yesterday, he blew a ball by Grichik, a fastball. He had no chance to hit it, and then he comes back with a slider to speed up his bat, and he hits it in the stands. To me, that's not a good pitch. And Vinny's got to learn how to read hitter swings sometimes. But stuff-wise, I think it plays. And you know what? If he gives you five innings, which if he does that, we're in good shape, because if you go to the bullpen and use three or four guys on the night Vinny pitches, you got Nola coming up next. It, normally, Nola's going to go seven, eight innings, so it'll be easier on your bullpen. But I like our arms. I don't want anybody to get hurt. You know, we went through that whole season last year without a pitcher getting hurt. Right. So
other than Eichhoff.
And Eichhoff's throwing good right now. So we do have a safety net down there. Drew Anderson's pitched exceptionally well here. So we have some arms down there that if somebody goes down, is on the injured reserve list or injured list, what they call them, they can't call it DL. If they go on the injured list, we have some players down there that can come in and I think do a great job.
All right, Larry, it was 24 months ago. You, me, and John are sitting in the same booth, and you are just glowing on Scott Kingery. I think it may have been the first time I ever heard of him. 12 months ago, the new deal, and last year, not that outstanding at all. What's going on with Kingery?
I'm still glowing about Kingery. I still think this kid's going to be a good baseball player. I think people forget the fact that he's a young kid. He comes up. It's hard enough playing your first year in the big leagues when you're playing one position. I mean, he played short, he played second, he played third, he played the outfield. That's a big, big thing to put on a young kid. And I'm sure to start off the season, he's going to be doing the same thing. Second, filling it short, play a little third. I don't know if he's going to play outfield, but if Gabe gets caught in a bind, he could go out there. This kid's going to be a good baseball player. It's very difficult to come up here and try to learn three, four positions. And no one's really had the opportunity to watch this kid play second base. He is unbelievable at second base. And obviously, he's blocked there right now by Cesar. And once he gets to a point where he's playing a position, you're going to see good things, because I think he's working a couple things on his swing. He started swinging up a little bit. He got caught up in that launch angle a little bit. He's not that type of hitter. And in the words of Charlie Manuel, know thyself, he's a line drive hitter. And he's got to realize, I'm a singles and doubles hitter. If I hit home runs, great. But once he realized that, I think he's going to do a very good job here in Philadelphia.
Is Andrew McCutchen reinvigorated?
Yeah, if you look what he did when he went to New York, you know, they were in a pennant race, and his on-base percentage was like over 400. So I think he feels the vibe going on here, too. I don't think you can play him like you would play him when you were in Pittsburgh. You know, he played almost every game. You got to give him a rest every now and then. But he's swinging the bat very well. He brings a lot of energy to the park every day. He's another proven veteran that knows how to play the game. That's the one thing I have. If you look at our lineup last year, we had Hernandez, Odubel, and Mikey all hitting towards the top of our lineup. They're going to be hitting towards the bottom of our lineup. So I think that tells you how strong our lineup has gotten with the people that we've obtained. So when you have those guys towards the bottom of your lineup, now you mix them in with the guys we got, that's a pretty potent lineup, 1 through 8. And it's hard to get through that lineup three or four times in a night.
No question. All right, Larry, fascinate your answer to this question. The new rules that are being discussed, pace of play issues. I hate the three-pitcher minimum thing, three-batter minimum. What do you make of it? Where do you stand on this stuff?
I don't like the three-batter minimum because, let's face it, they've got guys up here that are making a living getting their left-handed specialists.
Totally.
They're trying to get a left-handed hitter out. If he doesn't get it, he's probably out of the game. The one rule that's a joke is moving that mound back. I don't know whose idea that was. That is really a joke. They're going to do this in the Atlantic League, I guess. You know, tell hitters how to handle the bat a little bit and beat the shift a little bit. That's another thing. If you have all this information and you put three guys on the infield on one side, shame on the hitter if he can't manipulate the bat a little bit and go the other way. They're trying to make sure two infielders are on each side, which I think is a joke. And as far as pace of play, I don't think they're ever going to get, you know, you have commercials. Let's face it. When you're on the National Game of the Week, you got commercials that are over 2.5 minutes. I do think that once a hitter steps in a box, hey, let's go. You shouldn't be able to step out. But there was one more that was a joke. First of all of them to me are a joke. They're all a joke. So I just assume there's nothing wrong with this game of baseball, believe me. But they're trying to reinvent the wheel here, and and change a lot of the rules. And believe me, I like change. I think it's good. But some of these rules, I'm scratching my head. The one that moved the mound back, that I have trouble really grasping that.
Larry, keep that fire burning with the Phillies for a long
time. I'm going to ask you, Joe,
yes.
Serious.
Yeah.
Were you trying out there with the Fanatic? Really?
You're talking about a little dancing yesterday?
Yeah, yeah.
I would say the answer is no.
Okay, as long as you weren't trying, I'm good with it. You had to go along with the game plan, so.
Pretty much. As right, John knows, I was dead against it. They asked me to dance yesterday. I was like, I don't want to do it.
Yeah, you guys have been Philly. You might have missed something, man. Something, really.
Larry, great
seeing you. Guys.
Always great seeing
you.
Guys great Larry
good.
Bo.
See you up there.
Seeing you back in the ballpark. Since the bank in 6 days. All right, 888-729-9494. If you don't know what Bo's talking about, John will fill you in. More details coming up next.
Joe DiCamera and John Ritchie. Middays, 10 a.m. till 2 on Sports Radio 94 WIP.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.